Ever since George Balanchine founded it, the New York City Ballet has been known for its willingness to perform new works. And its latest festival, The Architecture of Dance, is no exception. The company's spring season, which runs through Sunday, includes 7 new ballets, 4 newly commissioned musical scores, and a series of custom-designed stage sets created by Santiago Calatrava, the renowned Spanish architect. With me now to bring us up to date on what's happening at the New York City Ballet is Peter Martins, the company's longtime ballet master-in-chief. Mr. Martins also choreographed one of the new ballets, Mirage, which had its world premiere at Lincoln Center last night. I'm very pleased that it has brought him to our show today. Hello.
Hi.
For anyone who missed last night's premiere, Mirage will be performed again tonight and then twice on Saturday.
Yes, it will.
You set your ballet to a violin concerto. We were just listening to a little bit of it, recently composed by Esa-Pekka Salonen, the Finnish conductor and composer. How did you come to work together?
I approached him. I called him up, and I was lucky enough to be able to meet him when he was in New York. This is like about a year ago, I believe. And we met at a hotel, and I said to him, you know, I was planning on this big festival, and I would love for him to consider making a piece for me.
Well, is it because of the kind of music that he composes? He is one of the most renowned composers in the world right now.
Correct. And I knew he had just announced at the time that he was leaving L.A. Philharmonic to devote his time to composing. And so I thought this is the moment for me to ask him. But of course, he was already busy, and many people, many orchestras had commissioned him. And he was telling me that he was in the process, I think he said, of writing a violin concerto for the L.A. Philharmonic as a farewell piece and the Chicago Symphony.
So you became the third member of the group.
Exactly.
Is his music good to choreograph to?
Well, it's in this particular case, I think the violin concerto was very danceable, which took me some time to discover, because when I first heard it, I went to the world premiere at Disney Hall about, I think, eight months ago or so. And I said to myself, whoa, what do I do with this? But then I lived with it for sort of 6, 7, 8 months, and I became very familiar with it and found my sort of, I said, no, this is doable.
Well, the reason I ask is in the early days of the New York City Ballet, there was a lot of Stravinsky performed.
Oh, yes.
It, and usually that meant an awful lot of strong rhythm.
Yes.
This piece it doesn't have any drums in it.
Oh, yes, it does.
It
indeed.
Does?
Oh, yes. There's a wonderful third movement that is extremely danceable.
And so this is going to be performed by the two orchestras and by New York City Ballet. In fact, didn't Mr. Salonen conduct the orchestra for last night's performance?
He sure did, and he is doing it again tonight. And Leila Josefovic, is the wonderful violinist, is playing the violin, and he wrote it for her. So she's going to be here tonight and on Saturday. So it's very exciting.
This led to you and Mr. Salonen receiving an award for music from the American Music Center. Now, I could see giving you an award as a choreographer, but music?
Well,
how much of a role do you play in the creation of music?
Well, I was myself extremely honored to receive an award like that. As I mentioned last night in front of the audience, I said, you know, one thing is to get an award for dance, but to get one for music, and I was extremely honored. And I have always championed new music, in particular American music.
So I
suppose that was probably the reason.
Well, when you've commissioned a piece, not this kind of piece, which is also written for other places, do the composers consult with you and ask you what might really work for your dancers?
In some cases, absolutely. You know, I have had both experiences where I have asked a composer to write a piece and he just writes it. And then there are other times when we collaborate, so to speak.
For example, Mauro Bigonzetti, the choreographer of another one of the new ballets, and Bruno Moretti, who composed the music for it, have said that they collaborated on their project, each making adjustments as needed.
Right. But they're very good friends, and they're both Italian. They live in the same town in Italy, and so they work very close together.
And they had worked together at the Rome Opera Ballet.
Correct.
So, but is that something that's happened throughout the history of ballet?
Yes.
I mean, Tchaikovsky, did he?
Exactly. Tchaikovsky, starting with Tchaikovsky and Marius Petipa, who choreographed the three great, you know, Swan Lake, Nutcracker, and The Sleeping Beauty. I mean, it was in the case of that collaboration, it was the choreographer who went to Tchaikovsky and specified what he needed.
Well, you have a number of pairs here. Alexei Ratmansky with Edward Lau.
Well, Lalo is no longer with us. Oh. So that was a pre-existing piece of music.
But, I mean, that was also done in a collaboration, wasn't it?
Well, no. He just chose that score, mm-hmm. Ratmansky.
And when you're choosing a score, are there certain things that you look for? Or do you just, or is it nice to choose a score and then say, what can I find within this?
It's an interesting question. I remember when I commissioned Wynton Marsalis some years back, he said to me, what do you like, man? And I said, you know, it's hard to explain. I'm not a music person. But I said to him, well, he said, well, tell me what existing music do you like? And I remember him in my office, I pulled out Petrushka. And I put in the CD, and I played certain phrases of Petrushka, and I said, this is what I like, and this is why I like it. It was very, very syncopated and very jazzy and very dynamic. And he said, oh, of course you love it. So that was sort of a hint, if you will. And then, of course, Wynton wrote what he wanted anyway.
Mm-hmm. Were you with the New York City Ballet when Balanchine was doing all of those pieces, those Stravinsky pieces?
You know, I remember, yes, the answer is yes. I remember seeing Stravinsky at the New York State Theater, which what it was called in those days. And he actually came and conducted. I forget what he conducted.
That must have been a thrill.
It was a thrill.
Well, it was called the New York State Theater in those days. Now it has a new name. In fact, we had recently, we spoke with the director of, with George Steele, the director of the New York City Opera,
right,
about all the changes there. The changes were done, now it's what, the David Koch Theater?
David Koch Theater.
Were they done with the acoustics in mind or with the ballet company in mind as well?
Well, absolutely, both of us. I mean, you know, the opera has, you know, a set of their wishes and the ballet has a set of their wishes, and then we sort of ended up compromising. But the one thing that we both wanted was an enlarged pit with an elevator that can go up and sort of adjust how high you want it, which, of course, addresses the acoustic issues.
That was the orchestra pit, but also there are two new aisles in the seating, right?
Absolutely.
And why is that important?
Well, it's important for our patrons. It's, you know, a survey had suggested that was really what people wanted.
Of course, there was a time when opera and ballet were performed together. Anyway, there was always a ballet in the middle of an opera. Do they have the same needs in a theater?
No, we have different needs. But although we both play music, so we both care about acoustics, obviously.
My guest is Peter Martins. We're talking about the New York City Ballet's new season and this festival, which was organized in celebration of Lincoln Center's 50th anniversary. How far ahead do you need to start planning a festival that contains so many new works?
You know, I thought I was way early and, you know, on the right at the right time. But, of course, I realized that if you want to commission composers, you have to be at least 2 or 3 years ahead of the time. So I was able to get 4 commission scores, but if I had maybe asked a year or two earlier, I would have had more.
Mm-hmm. Although in the case of Esa-Pekka Salonen, you lucked out because he was already working on
it. I was lucky
something.
There, yes.
Well, there's also the matter of raising money when you're having such an ambitious project. And the economy right now is not at its best. How difficult is it?
Well, it is, of course, very, very difficult.
You started, I guess, before this economic downturn.
Well, yes, I did. But nevertheless, the money, you know, needed to be raised in order for me to pull this off. But if you think about it, you know, I don't think it's a secret. I think the entire festival had a price tag of about $2 million. where you had 7 new ballets and 4 commissioned scores and the likes of Calatrava working, et cetera, et cetera. So it's extraordinary when you read about the Met spends that and maybe double for a new production of an opera, for one. So it's all relative. I think it's pretty amazing that we were able to accomplish that much for $2 million.
In a story in the New York Times on June 3rd, Anthony Tomasini said your current dance festival can also be seen as an ambitious festival of modern music. How open are audiences to new musical scores? There's a new film on Igor Stravinsky and Coco Chanel, and which opens up with a riot for when The Rites of Spring was performed the first time.
Right.
And, of course, now people want to see that performed, but there is always a bit of a resistance to the new, isn't there?
I suppose, but there's also a curiosity. I mean, you know, this is New York City, and I think there's a great hunger for the new in all the arts, music, you know, painting, dance, literature. I think if there's ever a place, if there was a place ever that would sort of endorse the whole notion of the new, you would think it would be in the New York City,
So you find people are open, audiences.
I think so. There's a great curiosity.
How many new musical scores does the New York City Ballet commission in an average year?
Ooh, it's not quite that simple. If you look at it over a long period of time, you would be astonished at the numbers that we have commissioned. It's usually related to a festival. And so when we do have a festival, that's when you have commission scores. Mm. But on a regular basis, it doesn't happen as often.
But in the case of the New York City Ballet, because of this tradition of new works, you probably commission more than most ballet companies.
We commission more music than most symphony orchestras. Frankly.
And is this because of the Balanchine tradition?
Yes, absolutely.
He asked you, he selected you before his death in 1983 to take over leadership of the company. How long before then did he start to talk to you about that?
Well, I don't know if he selected me. He asked me about 7 years before his death if I was interested. Mm-hmm. He didn't ask me to take over. He said, is this something that interests you? And I said, absolutely. And he said, good. And then we just talked about all sorts of other things in the ensuing years.
Well, I've often wondered about why some people get selected or decide to go into those kinds of jobs and others don't. For example, you look at baseball players, and some are brilliant on the field but would never imagine going into coaching or management. And then there are others who make perfect managers. And I wondered, did he see it in your dancing, do you think, or something else?
No, that's what I mean. When he asked me, are you interested, he simply asked me, and I said yes. And he saw me always in the theater. I never left the theater. I was always there. Even when I didn't have to be there, I was there.
Well, he did inspire the kind of loyalty that few other choreographers have. I remember Maria Tolci being on the show, and we were talking about Balanchine, and I mentioned that he dumped her for another woman, and yet she was talking about him in such glowing terms, and she said, well, he was a genius.
Well, but my situation was different. It wasn't so much a loyalty. I was simply curious. I was just observing him choreograph, teaching. I watched him run the place and how he dealt with people. It was fascinating to me.
Well, you came from the Royal Danish Ballet, where you had been a principal dancer. What led you to leave that, where you were a star, to come here?
Because I just wanted to go to America. It had nothing to do with Balanchine. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, I've told this story before. It was really about one simple thing. It was about West Side Story. I had seen the film West Side Story when I was about 16, 17 years old.
And Jerry Robbins was also connected to the New York City Ballet at times.
Absolutely. And so West Side Story is what made me fall in love with America.
But I imagine that the style of the companies were quite different.
Of course. And, of course, I knew a little bit about the New York City Ballet, and I had heard of Balanchine. But it was really the whole notion of this American raw country waiting for me. I just couldn't resist.
And then it didn't hurt that you were frequently paired with Suzanne Farrell, because that seemed like a magical connection.
Well, we didn't. We just got along, and we sort of... Actually, we physically got along. If you, we just hit it off dancing. It's not that we had a relationship.
I just meant on the stage.
I know that. We just danced well together. But it's not that we had lunches and dinners and there was...
Well, we don't care whether Ginger Rogers and Fred Astaire were friends. We just care that they were so great on the screen.
It just somehow worked. The good height, good proportion. And we had the same sort of... neither one of us liked to rehearse, which was perfect.
You didn't like to rehearse.
I hated it and she hated it.
What would you say makes for a New York City ballet dancer? Do you think you look for the same things that other ballet directors would look for?
I don't think there is a particular New York City ballet dancer. We have all sorts of shapes and sizes and different kinds of people. I think there's a few characteristics which separates, I think, the New York City ballet dancer from others. And I think an innate musicality is what we look for. We look for an ability to absorb and learn quickly because we have a vast repertoire. And I look for, you know, it's all about proportion. You can have a very tall person with bad proportion and a very short person with fantastic proportion. It's all about proportion.
But it's also about being able to pair them because I remember speaking to a movie star who came to America as a dancer. She's 6'1".
Yes.
And she said that she left dancing mainly because she couldn't find enough partners who could lift her.
Right.
That's a whole other issue, and that's unfortunate because, what's her name? Charlize Theron. She's done okay in her other life. You talked about the huge repertoire you have.
Yes.
You keep on introducing new works, and then you have all those Balanchine classics, so you have to find a way to balance the two because... Would a season be complete if you didn't go back to some of the
of
great Balanchine works?
But you have to remember that all those works that Balanchine and J.A. Robbins did, they were new ones too. And my favorite saying is that made on the premises. Everything we do is essentially made on the premises. Not only the choreography, but the dancers. And a large part of the music. So everything is homemade.
But there's also the matter of keeping things fresh, isn't there?
Of course.
So how do you do that without it just making something into a museum work?
Because what you do is you know, I live in that theater and I try to imbue I try to sort of look each day at a particular ballet in a fresh way and try to give it some life at that particular day.
I'm talking to Peter Martins, who is the ballet master in chief of the New York City Ballet. You mentioned the participation of Santiago Calatrava, the Spanish architect, in some of these pieces. He's in New York. He's probably best known for designing the new transportation hub for the World Trade Center site. And he's been a guest on the show to talk both about his architecture and his sculpture. Were you interested in him mostly, I guess, as a sculptor?
Well, I only knew him as an architect, and I thought, you know, I'd like to sort of ask him if he would participate in this whole notion of creating scenic design. And I had no idea that he was also a painter and a sculptor and God knows what. He does everything.
Ceramist.
So, absolutely. So he ended up doing two or three sort of hanging sculptures and some stationary architectural designs, if you will, and then some painted backdrops. So he's an extraordinary artist.
You didn't expect as much.
I did not. And I also did not expect him to be so easygoing and so willing to collaborate.
In addition to all of the new work, the New York City Ballet's spring season so far has been has included final performances by three of its principal dancers, Yvonne Bray, Philip Neal and Albert Evans, and also Darcy Kistler, who also happens to be your wife, will dance her last performance on Sunday. How do dancers know when it's time to retire?
Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't, but for the most part they do. You know, we all do. We all think of it before we actually do it. It's something you contemplate for a number of years, I think.
Well, they often dance in a lot of pain, don't they?
Some do, yes. I remember, you know, I remember when I stopped dancing, it was something that I had asked when I was 33 years old. I said to my husband, you know, I'd like to stop dancing. And he said, what would you do? And I said, well, I'll choreograph and I'll do whatever you want me to do. And he said, I want you to dance. You keep dancing. So when I finally stopped dancing, it was for different reasons. It was because Balanchine died. I was thrilled to no longer dance because, you know, like you said, my back was in pain. And so it was time.
But you're going to lose four major dancers in one single
season. I am, and it's sad, it's bittersweet, but life goes on, and it's the right time for all of them.
Your son, Niels Martens, is a principal dancer with the company. That has to be both gratifying and a little strange. What about your daughter with Darcy Kistler, Talisha? Is she interested in dance?
She was, but now she wants to be a singer/actress.
Uh-huh.
And she has a very high soprano voice, and I'm told that it's a very good one, but she's too young to really pursue it too seriously yet.
I want to thank you so much for being on our show. Peter Martens has been the longtime ballet master-in-chief of the New York City Ballet, and we've been talking about this festival, the Architecture of Dance, that continues through this week. Thank you so much for being with us.
My pleasure.